Okay, today is December 30th, Kaf Vav
Grandma
Tevet.
Renee's birthday.
Oh, right.
101 years old.
Wow, she would have been.
Yeah.
Allah Shalom. Okay, Kaf Vav Tevet. And today, you'll see why, we are going to focus on Yocheved. But before we focus on Yocheved, we have to focus on the place where we first see Yocheved's name. And that is in this very strange genealogy. So I think I'm just going to show you where it takes place first. Sorry, it's the wrong chapter. Okay, so this week's parsha starts actually with Pasuk Bet. So Pasuk Bet is the beginning of this week's parsha. Pasuk Aleph is the end of Ve'era, so the Christians got it wrong. And here is Hashem giving the famous Arba Lashonot Ge'ula, the four languages of redemption, to Moshe Rabbeinu in this very inspiring speech. And Moshe says, and he tells Moshe that he has to go with Aaron to Paro, sorry. And Moshe says, they're not going to listen to me. And Hashem says, no, you're going to do it, and this is what you're going to say. And right in the middle of Hashem telling Moshe and Aaron what they're going to say, you see here verse 13, so the Lord spoke to Moshe and Aaron, and he commanded them concerning the children of Israel and concerning Paro, the king of Egypt, to let the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. So we don't exactly know what it is they're supposed to say, and before we know it, we're hit with this genealogy that goes all the way here, which we're going to look at quickly. And it ends with like a recap. Once we get to Aaron and Moshe, that is Aaron and Moshe to whom the Lord said, take the children out of the land of Egypt with their legions. And they are the ones who spoke to Paro, the king of Egypt, to let the children out of Egypt. They are Moshe and Aaron. And this is, he says, and then we recap the story. And then the next chapter begins all of the, where Hashem tells Moshe exactly what he's going to say. And they go in and they start all the signs and all the 10 plagues start. Okay, so it's in a very strange place. It's interrupting this speech. If you know from last week's parsha, Moshe and Aaron already went to Paro and they failed miserably. And Paro increased the workload of the slaves. He was no longer giving them straw. They had to go fetch their own straw. And Moshe, at the end of the parsha, is very dismayed about the whole situation, that he's not doing any good. So this is like, go to Paro 2.0. And in the middle of this is this genealogy. So I just highlighted some of the names. So it starts with Reuven, and it lists his sons who went to Egypt with him. And then it goes to Shimon, and it lists his sons that went to Egypt with him. And then we have a very different beginning for Levi. Ve'elishmot b'nei Levi l'toldotam. So it gives a much grander introduction. These are the names of Levi after their generations. And then not only that, but we get more details. We get the number of years that Levi lived, 137 years. And then each of his sons, we go into a brief genealogy, Gershon, and it gives us the years of Kehat, because Kehat is the father of Amram. And then it, not only that, but it goes into even more detail once we get to Amram, and it tells us that Amram took Yocheved Dodato. We're going to talk a little bit about that word. I'm not going to go into the whole halachic significance. So it can mean two things. Dodato can either mean his aunt, in which case Amram would have been breaking a Torah law because you are not allowed to marry your father's sister. So they go into a whole thing about maybe it was his mother's sister, but really it's not good according to Torah law. But it's before the Torah, obviously. A girl can marry her uncle. We'll see something about that in a minute. Another not completely novel way to understand dodato, which is an interesting phenomenon in the Hebrew language to begin with, that dod and doda mean uncle and aunt, respectively. And dod, you probably know that word from dodili, Va'ani lo haro'eh, my beloved, right? So you see in the Hebrew language how it feels about the aunt and uncle relationship, that they're beloved people. And we see, I'm just going to take you to oh, I know why. I don't have my thing plugged in. That'll make it easier for me. Sorry. Okay. So the Keter Yonatan, which again is the Hebrew translation of the Aramaic translation of the Torah attributed to Yonatan ben Uziel from the Mishnah. So if you look at how he says, Vayikach Amram et Yocheved, so Amram took Yocheved, Chavivato. So if you guys know what the word Chabibi, Chaviv, his beloved. So the Targum Yonatan translates Doda, not as his aunt, but his beloved. So that is one way of dealing with the halachic issue of marrying your aunt. But on the other hand, we learned from the previous parsha where it describes Yocheved as Bat Levi, the daughter of Levi, and we see that Amram is a grandson of Levi, that she really was his aunt. So you can't run away from it too much. Okay, and then we learn about Aaron, specifically, that he married Elisheva. And we learn about his children, Nadav, Avihu, Eleazar, Itamar. And then we learn about not just our heroes, but some of our anti-heroes as well. Korach, who's going to get swallowed up by the pit, and his children. And then we learn who Aaron's son Eliezer married from the daughters of Putiel, who we're going to see is attributed to Yosef. So he married one of Yosef's daughters, and they had Pinchas. And Pinchas, of course, is going to be famous for making the shish kebab out of the two people who were acting inappropriately in front of the Ohel Moed, the Nasi of the tribe of Shimon, and the Midianite princess. Okay, so that is the genealogy and some of the highlights of it. And so now we have a question that we're going to address before we get to Yocheved, although it will lead us into Yocheved and her character, is what is this genealogy doing here? And why is it interrupting this mission of that Hashem is giving over to Moshe Rabbeinu? So first we're going to look at this Midrash from Psikta Rabbati. So among a lot of other explanations, he's quoting from Shir Shirim, your everything about you is beautiful, my beloved. Midaber b'shvatim. It's speaking about the shvatim, about the tribes. V'im tomar harei Yaakov avihem be'rech l'shvatim ve'kamkanter levurin v'shimon v'levi hechata omer. So now we have an issue. If you remember the blessings that Yaakov gave to his children at the end of Bereshit, so Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, we wouldn't exactly characterize them as blessings. He gave them a lot of criticism and critique. Shimon and Levi, he said, you're about your anger. Reuven, he said he was impetuous. And it really didn't sound like he was saying anything nice at all. So how can all the tribes be beloved? Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Afa pisha berecha tashvatim ha'achronim v'kinter tarishonim, even though he blessed the latter tribes and he prosecuted the first ones, Elchazar Bercham, he did go back and bless them all, Kamasha Katav, Kol Ela Shivte Yisrael Shnimasar, where it says at the very end of the blessings, all of the tribes of Yisrael, of Yaakov, were 12. Mahu Bezot Asher Diber Lehem Avihem Vivarech Otam, what does it mean? Also at the end of that, it says that he blessed them, meaning all of them. Amar Avi Elzar, Asa Otam Yon Kim Zamizeh, Lefichach, Amar Rav Huna veRabbi Levi shehu mona otam leatzman v'sefer eleshmot, umiachsan etzal Moshe veAaron. So he made each of them get from the other one. Yonek is to nurse. So they each garnered the benefit from each other. They were cooperative. And therefore, he counted them by themselves again in Shmot. The very beginning of Shmot, where it lists all their names. And then he makes the genealogy with Moshe and Aaron, Elo Roshe Beit Avotam B'nei Reuven, B'nei Shimon, U'B'nei Levi. So this little mini genealogy where it only goes through Reuven, Shimon, and Levi is to show that they were actually blessed. Kach darash Rabbi Huna v'Rabbi Levi. This is what Rabbi Huna and Rabbi Levi said. V'lo pershu, v'lama hu miachsam etzal Moshe and Aaron. So why bother with Shimon and Levi if it doesn't go into the details of who came out of them? When we want to get to Moshe and Aaron, and they don't come from Shimon, from Reuven and Shimon, they come from Levi. Ma ta'omer bishvil shekintram avihem u'mena et shloshtan atzman harei yafa. So that which you say, that because he prosecuted, their father prosecuted them, and he counts these three by themselves, this is good. V'lama hu somcham l'moshe v'la'aron. So why does he put them all right next to Moshe and Aaron? V'yedaber Hashem l'moshe v'la'aron. In that pasuk, Amar Rabbi, be Rabbi Simon, b'shem Rabbi Shmuel, v'Rabbi Yitzchak, l'fi shekiblu tochachot avihem. Since they, this is so beautiful. So, since they accepted, they received the rebuke of their father, they merited to be related in this bigger picture of this mini genealogy with Moshe and Aaron. I didn't give you the translation. I don't want to screw up that translation, so let me just show you where it is. Mishle Tetvav. And that was Pasuk Lamed Aleph. So we'll just read it. The ear that listens to reproof of life shall lodge among the wise. Okay, so perfect. So this reason is my favorite reason for why this genealogy appears in a truncated form right in the middle of Moshe and Aaron being sent off to their successful now mission 2.0 is because they were prosecuted by Yaakov at the end of Bereshit. They had done some bad things. And the genealogy is showing us that they clearly listened to their father, accepted the rebuke, and improved themselves to the extent that this genealogy starts off with Reuven and Shimon, even though it wasn't necessary and we were just getting to the line of Levi to get to Moshe and Aaron. They get to be associated with Moshe and Aaron because they listened to the rebuke of their father. So it explains a whole bunch of things. It explains why Yaakov prosecuted them, why we have the short genealogy, what became of them after they were prosecuted. It's just a really beautiful explanation. So I should have done that one last and these less beautiful ones first. So Rashi says that he starts with Moshe, with Reuven and Shimon, because he wants to get to Levi, and so he does it. And then he brings the Midrash that we just saw to infer that even though Jacob rebuked them, they are of high esteem, so that if you're worried about them after the rebuke in those brachot, you can see that they turned out okay. Ramban says that you shouldn't think Levi was the firstborn, that we had to start with Reuven and Shimon to show that Levi was indeed still the thirdborn. And also that because in the case of Reuven and Shimon, it mentioned only those who went down to Egypt with them, but in the case of Levi, it mentioned his children, the number of years of his life, the birth of the fathers of the prophets, namely Kahat, the grandfather and Amram, the father of Moshe and Aaron, and the number of years of their lives, all in honor of the prophets. So this is like the big intro opening to Moshe and Aaron to hear all about their forefathers and who came before them. Besides, they themselves were the pious ones of the Most High, Kahat and Amram, worthy to be spoken of as the fathers of the world. So it's like this big honorary introduction to who Moshe and Aaron were. Sforno is really interesting. I found all these in English, so that was nice. Moshe and Aaron were justifiably referred to as the heads of the various tribal groups of Israel, as they were the most respected and most honored. Reuven Bechor Yisrael, Reuven the firstborn of Israel, seeing that none of his descendants were particularly noteworthy except his sons, who had been part of the original 70 persons who had come to the land of Egypt from Canaan, none other are mentioned. So meaning Reuven had four righteous sons, but they all died and nobody else came out of them. All those 70 persons had already died, as we know from the first parak of Shemot, where it tells us that everyone died. The same consideration held true for the descendants of Shimon. On the other hand, Levi, the longest surviving member of the original 70 Hebrews who migrated to Egypt, managed to raise even his grandchildren to become leaders of the people in their own right. So for the grandparents on the call, this is an argument for the importance of grandparents and their presence in their children's and grandchildren's lives, and the impact that you can have as a grandparent, that we see that Levi was able to live through and see his grandchildren and help in the raising of them, and that produced leaders. Amram produced three outstanding children in the persons of Aaron, Moshe, and Miriam, all of whom attained prophetic stature. We're going to see that the way he phrases this, Amram produced, from sources earlier than him, would include Yocheved, because she's mentioned explicitly in this genealogy. We have to say Amram and Yocheved. Aaron married a sister of Nachshon, who had been considered the most notable member of the nation in his time. So he married Elisheva, who was the sister of Nachshon ben Aminadav, who's most famous in the Midrash for stepping into the sea first, so it would split. He begat leaders of the generation who were later on appointed as priests. Eleazar, son of Aaron, took as a wife one of the daughters of Putiel, who is also considered outstanding. I told you that the Midrash says that's a daughter of Yosef. I think somebody else might say it's a daughter of Yitro, another daughter of Yitro, I don't know. This union produced Pinchas, who was granted a covenant of peace by God as a reward for spontaneously slaying a high-ranking Israelite prince who flagrantly engaged in forbidden sex with a Midianite princess and had challenged Moshe to do something about it. So I didn't give you those explicit details, Forno did, or this translation. Ela Rashe Avot HaLevi'im, these are the heads of the houses of the Levi'im, just to tell us that Moshe and Aaron were the respective heads of the Levi'im. Okay. So that explanation shows us that Levi, in his long life, merited to have upstanding children. Now the Al-Sheikh, Levayir Akinogea B'Kvod Moshe, Shaleich Hashvu Banav K'bnei Achav, Shaloho Lid Hagonim. So he is questioning, why is it that Aaron's children and descendants are mentioned in this mini genealogy, but Moshe's children and descendants are not? So it didn't, his children, Moshe's children, were not considered at the same level as Aaron's children. He, in fact, there's some, in Shoftim we learn some bad stuff about some of his descendants. Hodi'anu zivuge Amram aviv Aaron ve'Eliezer. So it tells us all the children of Amram, his father, and Aaron, and it tells us children of Eleazar, Pinchas, lomar she'al yidei kachat Amram et bat Levi, zacha v'teled lo et Aaron v'et Moshe. So to tell us that in Amram taking a daughter of Levi, a prestigious wife, he merited that he would have Aaron and Moshe. Ve'al yidei kachat Aaron et Elisheva achot Nachshon ha-tzadik, al kein v'teled lo et Nadav, and by virtue of Aaron having taken Elisheva, who also came from this prestigious family and was a good woman, therefore she birthed to him Nadav and Avihu and all of his children. Ve'Elazar gam hu lekach mibnot Putiel, hu Yosef shepit pet b'yitro ve'amad b'nisyon lehitrachek min ha'avera. So Putiel is another name for Yosef because of how he put his own evil inclination aside to distance himself from sin. And that's who Elazar married. Yaldalo at Pinchas, she birthed for him Pinchas, shekana al over avera, that he was zealous over somebody who was committing a sin. Masha inkin ve'eshet Moshe. So I don't really know what to do with this because I don't want to insult the wife of Moshe, and I certainly don't want to insult Yitro, who is an important person of his own right. But the Al-Sheikh seems to be saying that you have to be very careful who you marry for your wife to make sure that she comes from a good family. Shelo haita bat avhen. But Moshe did not marry a woman that came from the line of Yaakov. Umimena nigrash limut banim. And through her, the completeness or the perfection of the children was taken down. So I'm not saying I'm agreeing with this. I like it more because of the way it elevates Yocheved and Elisheva and whatever daughter of Yosef this might have been, as opposed to how it doesn't say such nice things about Tzipora. But I liked it for that reason. Okay. And now the Kli Yakar. Lefi Sheratza Hashem Liten Oraita Talita. So he, I'm not going to read it inside. He's arguing that Hashem likes thirds, which is especially interesting in Egyptian society, which I think is called a primogenitor, which means it always goes by the firstborn. Everything is according to the firstborn, which was why the plague of the firstborn was so devastating to them. And this is showing, this little mini genealogy is showing that Judaism places no importance on fate, if you will, of who happens to be the firstborn. And it's showing us that Levi was the thirdborn. I don't know if Amram was even the firstborn. Moshe was the thirdborn. So it's all these things with threes. And it's also showing us that, I'm going to read, V'hamifarshim amru, the commentary said, Shehaya mechapes beruven tchila, that Moshe wasn't just a random firstborn or random thirdborn, if you will. Rather, Hashem was searching for the perfect. The Malbim actually uses the analogy of the pearl, sifting through the sand to find the pearl, which is really interesting because that's usually used for not why we have the genealogies of non-Jews, to show that the pearl wasn't found there, and that why we go into stories of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov as opposed to Yishmael and Esav. But here the Malbim uses it for the line of Yaakov. So first he looked in Reuven, and if he would find in within his sons a man according to his heart that was suiting for this mission, Kederach, then he would have chosen somebody from Reuven. But he was looking specifically for somebody very special. So this genealogy is to show you that Moshe wasn't a random person that Hashem just chose out of nothingness, but rather that Hashem was searching. And first he looked through Reuven, and then through Shimon, and then through Levi, and within the line of Levi he found Moshe. And he compares it, Kederach Shechipas Shmuel Hanavi Bivnei Yishai, the same way that Shmuel went through all of the children of Yishai before finding David. Be'alfinan chipus mechipus dehatam malahalan pasal rishonim ad asher matza aish klavo. We learn from each search that just like there, all the first ones were pasal, were not fitting, until he found the suitable one. Kach ratzal chapes kan bivnei Reuven v'shimon v'chapes v'lo matza ad asher tehe v'kan kano shel Levi. He went through the search of Reuven and then Shimon until he found within the container of Levi umatza at Aaron and Moshe. And he found Aaron and Moshe, v'shuv lo hayat tzarich lechapes, and he didn't have to continue his search after that. Okay, so this all, so these are all very different explanations as to why we had to have this mini genealogy, from this searching for the pearl to you shouldn't think that Levi suddenly became the firstborn, Reuven and Shimon were still ahead of him, to you may have been worried about Reuven and Shimon and what became of them after they were not blessed by their father Yaakov, and indeed they turned out right, even to the extent that they listened to the rebuke and they got to be associated with Moshe in this genealogy. That was a merit to them that they're mentioned here. And Rav Hirsch has a different take on this. I'm just going to read you two little paragraphs. It's very long. At the end of this source sheet, you can see the whole Hebrew. If you go into Sfaria, it will give you the German, the original German that Rav Hirsch wrote in. So if you understand German, you can go over there and read it. I have a really hard time finding English translations of Rav Hirsch online, so I'm just going to read to you from my book. So he says, up till now, Moshe and Aaron's efforts had been completely frustrated, and if nothing further was to occur, it would probably have been considered unnecessary to provide us with such exact proof of their parentage and relations. But from this point onward begins their triumphal mission, a mission which has never been accomplished before or after them, so that then it became a real necessity to first of all establish their parentage and relationships, so that for all time their absolute human origin and the absolutely ordinary human nature of their beings should be firmly established. So you can kind of see the direction that Rav Hirsch is going here, and it's almost a polemic against Christianity, that this genealogy is here to show you that Moshe did not appear miraculously. He had a mother and a father, and his mother and his father each had their own mothers and fathers that are clearly delineated in this genealogy. And that's the reason for it. But I think, I don't know if he's intentionally saying this, but I'm reading something else into it. So when something is named for the first time, that is the essence of that person or that thing. So when we see a name, when we're introduced to somebody by name, we know that that's important, especially in the case of both Yocheved and Amram, where we already met them last parsha in the second parak of Shemot, as pronouns, as vayelach ish mi Levi vayikach et bat Levi, a man of the house of Levi, mi beit Levi, went and he took a daughter of Levi. So no names are mentioned, even though we're meeting these characters who we know to be the mother and father of Moshe, and his sister as well, who's just called his achot. And even the daughter of Paro's name isn't given there. So that little section is clearly forcing us to focus on Moshe, because he's the only one that's named. And as we discussed last week, his name Moshe comes from Bitya Bat, the daughter of Paro, that she's the one who named him Moshe. So it's very interesting when we are finally told the names of his parents here in this mini genealogy, and all the more so the name of Yocheved, who's one of only a few women mentioned in this genealogy, and that is almost telling us that that is the seed, the essence of who they are and their purpose. So Moshe and Amram, what was the essence of who they were and their purpose? Perhaps it was to raise these amazing children. And that we're being told Yocheved and Amram's name here to tell us that this is when Moshe at 80 years old and Aaron at 83 years old, this is when they come to fulfill their purpose of what they're meant to do. And this is when we see the names of Yocheved and Amram who raised them to this point, to be these people to accomplish what they're about to accomplish. And I think it can be very gratifying for parents to think that they didn't see the realization of all their dreams and hopes for their children until their children were 80 and 83, which might be frustrating. But on the other hand, it can allow you to really never give up on your kids, that there's always time, and ourselves either, that there's always time for us to accomplish our purpose and make meaningful changes into the world, no matter how old you are. So that is the essence of it. And that's why they're being named here, because it's at this point that Moshe and Aaron begin their successful mission from God to bring the Jewish people out. And then he goes on. He goes on about A, that they were human, but B, that they were purposefully picked. They were searched out, similar to what we read in the Al-Sheikh. Was that the Al-Sheikh? Well, definitely it's in the Malbim. That this purposeful searching for the right, proper person who's fitting for this role, and that it wasn't, they didn't have miraculous births, that they're human, but at the same time, they were chosen. So then he says, in Genesis, at the very inception of our tribes, we were able to catch the feelings and thoughts with which Leah, that glorious mother of our people, bore under her heart those who were to be the future heads of the families of Israel. How it was only with Levi that she attained that happy state of bliss which characterizes true Jewish married life. So Reuven, Hashem has seen my pain that I'm not loved by my husband. Shimon, Hashem has heard my pain that I'm not loved by my husband. I'm paraphrasing. Levi is because now with three children, my husband will finally accompany me. I don't have enough hands for all three. He needs to be with me. And that's sort of the turning point between the relationship of Leah and Yaakov. And he goes on, if, as is quite probable, the thoughts and feelings with which a mother bears her child under her heart are not without influence in the mental nature of the future man, then, from the very names in which she expressed her innermost feeling, we can get an idea why not Reuven and why not Shimon, why it was just Levi who was suitable for selection. It's putting a lot of blame on the mother, but it's also putting a lot of responsibility on her too. And when we realize the thoughts and feelings, the strong courage and inspiration to duty that sent a man from the house of Levi back to a daughter of Levi, even in such a time of terror, meaning the Midrash that they remarried at that point because of Miriam's advice, which we will talk about when we get to Parshat B'Shalach. We're going to focus on Miriam then. And if we realize all the feelings of anxious hope and hopeful anxiety and the complete resignation and surrender of self to the will of God, with which Yocheved must have become the mother of Moshe, then we can well dare to form an idea what an influence these prenatal feelings may have had on the future man, in whose character the most valuable trait, the pearl that most made him suitable for his high mission, was anava, humility. So that's Rav Hirsch, placing both the blame but also the credit on the mother and how she felt about herself and how she felt about her children in conception and in birth and in raising them. So he's really giving Yocheved credit for the great man that Moshe became and his humility in Yocheved's courageous act of simply being with her husband to give birth to a child during this horrible time in the history of the Jewish people. So that leads us from discussing why this genealogy appears here in this strange place to discussing who Yocheved was. So some things I'm not going to focus on now because I'm going to focus on them more in her relationship to Miriam. So it's going to be a little choppy in that sense, but I hope you'll see who Yocheved was in and of herself, even as the mother of all of her children. So this is from the Gemara, Masechet Sota, Yod Aleph Bet. The verse states, "And the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, of whom the name of the one was Shifra and the name of the other Puah. Rav and Shmuel disagree as to the proper interpretation of this verse. One says that these midwives were a woman and her daughter, and one says that they were a daughter-in-law and her mother-in-law. So the fun part about just focusing on Yocheved, which I don't think very many people do outside of her relationship with Miriam or Moshe, is being able to see both of these aspects of the Midrash, that either they were Yocheved and Miriam, or they could have been Yocheved and Elisheva, as I am on the brink of becoming a mother-in-law for the second time. It's very inspiring to see these positive mother-in-law, daughter-in-law relationships in Tanakh. And according to the one who says that they were daughter-in-law and mother-in-law, the verse is referring to Yocheved and her daughter-in-law, Elisheva, the wife of Aaron. It is taught in a braita, according to the one who says that they were a woman and her daughter, because it is, with regard to Shifra, who is referred to in the verse, this is really a reference to Yocheved. And why was she called Shifra? Because she would prepare, mishaperet, the newborn. I think it means more improve. Alternatively, she is referred to as Shifra because the Jewish people increased and multiplied, shaparu virabu, in her days due to her assistance. And as continuation later in that same Gemara, the verse is referring to Yocheved as a daughter of Levi. The Gemara asks, is it possible that this is Yocheved? Yocheved was then 130 years old, and the verse still calls her a daughter? Yocheved's age is established based on a tradition concerning the number of the descendants of Jacob who came to Egypt as follows. While the verse states that Leah had 33 descendants, only 32 were enumerated. So remember, we talked a lot about this with Sarah bat Asher, that she completed the list. This was explained as Rabbi Chama, son of Rabbi Hanina, says, the daughter of Levi is Yocheved, whose conception was on the road, as the family of Yaakov descended to Egypt, and she was born between the walls in Egypt, as it is stated, and the name of Amram's wife was Yocheved, the daughter of Levi, who was born to Levi in Egypt. This interpolation concerning her birth is interpreted, her birth was in Egypt, but her conception was not in Egypt. Since the Jewish people were in Egypt for 210 years and Moshe was 80 years old at the time of the Exodus, Yocheved was 130 years old when Moshe was born. In light of this, the Gemara is asking how the verse can refer to her as a daughter. Rabbi Yehuda says, the signs of a young woman were born to her when her husband remarried her, and she became like a young girl again. So just to recap that, we saw a few weeks ago that Sarah bat Asher was the one who completed the number to 70. I think I brought that Bitya bat Paro may have been one who completed it. No, she wasn't. Sorry, not her at all. But this one is saying that Yocheved is the one that completed the number to 70. Okay, and then miraculously, she became like a young girl. The verse states concerning Moshe, and the woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw him, that he was a goodly child, right? Remember, it says Tov, she was Tov. She hid him 3 months. The Gemara asks, but Yocheved was pregnant with Moshe for 3 months at the outset. Now, this is something that I didn't know before, that I didn't realize, and we're going to see that it gets even more confusing in a little bit. So that when Amram divorced Yocheved because of the decree of Paro to kill all the baby boys, that she was already pregnant with Moshe. But then they remarried when Miriam convinced them, which we'll get to in Parsha B'Shalach, and she was already 3 months pregnant at that time. Rav Yehuda Bar Zvina said the intention of the verse is to juxtapose her giving birth to her becoming pregnant. Just as her becoming pregnant was without pain, so too her giving birth was without pain. And there, I didn't include them here, but there are other sources that say that Yocheved is a reincarnation of Chava. We saw before that the daughter of Paro may have been a reincarnation of of Chava also. And so Chava, we weren't intended to have any pain in pregnancy or in childbirth until the sin in the garden. And so that might be why Yocheved merited to have this with her righteousness. From here, it is derived concerning righteous women that they were not included in the verdict of Eve, that a woman will suffer pain during childbirth. Okay, so that's some information. There's another midrash that included one more explanation of her name that I liked. So from Shmot Rabbah, Rabbi Chanina bar Rab Yitzchak Amar Shifra, why is she called Shifra? She'emida Yisrael Elokim, should be Shvalam Nivra'u Hashamayim, because she stood Israel to God, that it was for them that the heavens were created. Shekatuv behem, Biruchho Shamayim Shifra. And this is from Eov. By his breath, he made the heavens a tent. So this, I'd never seen this definition of Shifra before, as a tent from Eov. And so that's why she calls Shifra, because she allowed not just the Jewish people to continue, but because the world was only made for the sake of the Jewish people, the entire world to continue. Okay, now Vayikra Rava. This is, we saw this before with the daughter of Paro, Bitya, that it explains that all of Divrei Hayamim is just to elicit more deeper understandings of the Tanakh. And it says, V'ishto ha-Yehudiya yaldat yared avigdor v'gomer. So we read this pasuk last week with Bitya, that the Jewish wife, the Judahite wife, gave birth to Yared and Avigdor. And last week we said that this referred to Bitya bat Paro, that she had converted. But here, this midrash says, V'ishto ha-Yehudiya zo Yocheved, that Yocheved was Yehudiya. But she wasn't a Judahite. She was Jewish, but she wasn't from the tribe of Judah. She was from Levi. Why was she called Yehudia? Because she, just like the previous midrash, she stood up Jews in the world. It was because of her. So it's going from defining it as Judah to defining it as a Jew. Okay, now for this midrash, we're going to need this pasuk from Tehillim. God settles the solitary in a house, and solitary is in plural here. So it can, Elokim Moshiv Yechidim. So it's not just one person in a house, it's several solitary people. He takes the prisoners out at the most opportune time, but the rebellious dwell in an arid land. So here the Midrash says, Yechidim mi hayaza, who were these solitary people? Amram v'Yocheved, Moshe's parents. Bizchut lehotzi asirim v'koshrot elu Yisrael shehayu meshubadim b'mitzrayim. So they merited to be the ones to take the prisoners out at the most opportune time by giving birth to Moshe. Ma'asa kadosh baruch hu, ziveg Yocheved la'amram. God made this pairing of Yocheved and Amram, and this could be speaking to the halachic issue of Amram marrying his aunt, b'chdei she'yamod mihem goel v'yiga'el Yisrael, so that the Redeemer would be born from them and redeem Israel. Okay, this is from Midrash Mishlei. We saw this last week with the daughter of Paro, where it takes each line of the alphabetic acrostic of Eshet Chayil and associates it with another woman of Tanakh. So this is Zamamasa Devatikachehu. She appraises and buys land. Whenever we have non-religious people at our Shabbos table Friday night, I always quote this because it's showing women buying and selling land independently from 3,000 years ago. And that's something that women could not do in England, I don't think, until the last 200 years or something. So it's and if I haven't mentioned it before, it's worth mentioning it right now. Eshet Chayil, there's an article by a JTS professor, Burton Vazatsky, who he quotes one of his students translating Eshet Chayil. So Eshet, female woman, right? Chayil, we usually translate woman of valor, but a Chayil, you all know, is a soldier, right? So his student translated it as militant feminist. So, Ron, I see you like that. Good. Okay. So, Zohi Yocheved. So this is attributed to Yocheved. She atzami menu Moshe, who had Moshe, shehu shakul keneged kol Yisrael. Moshe is equal to all of Israel, shenikra'u kerem. And Israel is called a vineyard. Shenemar ki kerem Hashem tzvakot beit Yisrael, the vineyard of God, and quoted by Yeshaya, is the house of Israel. So Yocheved, in purchasing this field of Moshe, I guess, is equivalent to all of Israel. Okay, another midrash of based on the midwives. Amar so vayitav elokim, that Hashem, God, did good for them. Amar Rabbi Berchia v'shem Rabbi Chia v'Rabbi Ava havahu dichtiv v'yomer le'adam hen yirat Hashem hi chokhma. So the fear of God is wisdom. Mahu schar hayirat Torah, what is the reward for fearing the Torah? Lefi sheyirat yocheved. So remember, the midwives feared God, and so God did good for them. So because you, and the midwives, according to the midrash, are Yocheved and Miriam, so because Yocheved feared God, he'emid mimena Moshe, Hashem made Moshe come out of her, shekatuv bo ki tovhu, of whom it is written he was good. So again, the pasuk says vayitav Elohim, Hashem did good for them because of their fear, and for Moshe ki tovhu, because he was good. V'nina ha-Torah al-yado, and the Torah was given by his hand. So the fear and the wisdom and the goodness. Shenikrat lekach tov, and the Torah is also called lekach tov, a good lesson. Ki lekach tov natati lehem, that we say when we put the Torah back in the ark. V'nikrat al-shmo, and it's called by his name. Shenemar zichru Torat Moshe avdi. Malachi says, remember the Torah of Moshe, my servant. And then, what's beautiful about this midrash, it doesn't just stop at Moshe. Miriam yatsa mimena betzalel. No, this isn't what I was thinking, sorry. But Miriam also is rewarded that betzalel came out of her. Shaya malei chokhma, and he was filled with chokhma. And again, the chokhma and the fear are related in that pasuk. So Miriam was the other midwife, and she feared God, so she got betzalel, who was filled with chokhma. Ve'amalei oto ruach elokim, I will fill him with the spirit of God. Vasei Aaron LaTorah, and he made the ark for the Torah, Shenikret Tov, which is also called good, Tov. Havi Vayitav Elokim LeMealdot. And this is all because God did them good. Vayarav Ba'am, and they increased the nation. L'kayam Masha Namar, Miza Amar Vatihi Hashem Lo Tziva, Imparo Tziva La'aroga Tzacharim, Mahu El Bigzer. This is what Miriam said to her father. And when he thought that he could make the Jewish people diminish, and in fact they increased. Okay, Chizkuni, on our pasuk of mentioning Amram and Yocheved by name in the mini genealogy. Veikach Amram et Yocheved dodato, ma shehiskim HaKadosh Baruch Hu sheyatza Adam gadol kamosha milikuchim. So that which God agreed that this great man like Moshe would come out of this union, which in the future the Jewish people would be warned never to, that a man should never marry his aunt, lefisha ein mamidim parnes al hatzibor ela im ken kupa shel shratzim tuluyabo betzavaro pen yitzka e al hatzibor kamo shematzino v'david. This will sound familiar for those of you who learned Shmuel with me from the long haul. So why did Moshe have to come from such a union that would become forbidden with the giving of the Torah? Because we don't make a leader of the public unless he has a box of creepy, crawly things hanging around his neck, so that lest he become prideful among the public, like we find with David. So what does that mean? That means that leaders have to have something to be ashamed of, not of their own doing per se, but in their birth. They have to know that they're human just like everybody else, and they come from not so auspicious beginnings, so that they don't become prideful and think they're better than anybody else. And of course, with David, this is his great-grandmother Ruth being a Moabitess, which it was controversial even while he was king whether he was kosher in that way. We know, of course, he was. But they can't become prideful. Okay, so now we get to something really weird, but I couldn't not include it. So if you remember from Parshat Balotcha, that Moshe, Rabbeinu, is despairing of being able to lead this people. And he says, Hashem, if I found favor in your eyes, kill me, basically, which is the exact point that my oldest son fainted in his laning of his bar mitzvah parsha, Balotcha, at this exact line. Don't worry, he was revived. He went on to do the Haftorah and give a speech, but he actually fainted in the middle of the reading at that moment that Moshe was despairing. So Hashem then says, I'll give you 70 elders and you'll put your spirit on them and they'll also prophesize. And after that happened, we learn now two men remained in the camp. The name of one was Eldad and the name of the second was Medad, and the spirit rested upon them. They were among those written, but they did not go out to the tent, but prophesied in the camp. And then if you know the story, Yehoshua comes running to Moshe saying, you know, they should be treasonous. And Moshe, in his amazing humility, says, would that all of Bnei Israel be prophets. And it doesn't bother him at all. So who are these Eldad and Medad? This is the weirdest thing. And anytime it was quoted, from this Keter Yonatan, who we quoted before, the Aramaic translation. And it doesn't seem to be in any other independent source. And it especially doesn't make any sense if Yocheved was already pregnant with Moshe when Amram divorced her. So that goes out the window with this, but here's what it says. So it starts out the same, telling us that two men remained in the camp. The name of one was Eldad and the name of the other was Medad. But then it tells us, Benav shel Eltzafan. They were Eltzafan's sons, Ben Parnach, shel Yalda lo Yocheved bat Levi, that Yocheved birthed to him, Bizman shegarsha Amram ba'ala v'nisetlo, at the time when Amram, her husband, divorced him, and she married Eltzafan, ad shelo yalda et Moshe, before she had given birth to Moshe, v'tishra alehem ruach nevuah, and this spirit of prophecy rested upon them. So I think what this is saying is that we really have to give Yocheved all the credit for these amazing children that she had, that even with a completely different man, Eltzafan, who's still within the house of Levi, she still had amazing children, Eldad and Medad, who became prophets in their own right. So it's crazy midrash. I don't know what to do with it. And you can do with it what you want, but there it is. Okay. The Maor V'Shemesh. So this is some Chassidus for us. And then, I don't know if we're going to have time. Okay, but this was really cool. V'kach Amram et Yocheved Dodeto. Amram took Yocheved, his aunt. Kvar amdu b'zeh hakadmonim. So every people before me have already spoken about this. Lama l'kach Amram Dodeto. Shesofa lehe aser. Why did he take his aunt? That in the end it would be forbidden to him. Umagam shaya muchan latzeit mizeh hazivug Moshe va'aron. And how could it be from this type of pairing that would be outlawed in the future, Moshe and Aaron could come out of this. Shatora nitna al yadam. That the Torah was given by way of them. That would make this forbidden. Vayira elomar. And it seems to say, al pi ma sheshamati migadol achad mitzadikai based on something he heard from a great man, a righteous person in his time. Lama mutar likach et bat achav o bat achoto? Why is it permitted to take the daughter of his brother or the daughter of his sister? The asur likach dodato, but he can't take his aunt. So why can he marry a niece but not an aunt? Ve'amar ki b'chol ha'olamot heim b'chinat d'char v'nukva. He says, in all the world, there's this aspect of masculine and feminine. This is very Kabbalistic. V'hamikablim ha-hashba'a hema lamata mimadrigat ha-mashfi'im. So masculinity is always hashba'a, influencing or bestowing. Femininity is always accepting. So it's not necessarily men and women. It's whoever is in the act of bestowing and whoever is in the act of receiving. So, and the bestower is always in a slightly higher level than the receiver. And in all pairings, marriages, it has to be like this. That the bestower is slightly elevated from the receiver. And that's why you can marry your niece. Because he's the bestower and she receives from him. Alkein hu gadol b'madrega b'dor l'mala mimenu. He's greater in that he's from a generation higher than her. Be'asur b'dodato, but he can't marry his aunt. That the receiver should not be higher than the bestower. And these are the words of somebody who is very knowledgeable in Kabbalah. And this is how it works in all of the chains of the world. The bestower is greater than the receiver. Umnam, however, Beseder limud haTorah eino ken. That's not how it is when we learn Torah. Shelefamim haTalmid gadol yoter meharav. Sometimes the student is actually much greater than the teacher. V'zeh tachlit halimud, and this is actually the purpose of studying, of learning. Lehaktin etatzmo v'lilmod mikol adam. The teacher, the rav, has to lessen, make himself smaller in order to be able to learn from everyone. Gam min haktanim mimenu, even from those who are smaller than him. Kemamar hakatuv, like it says in Tehillah, mikol milam dai hiskalti, from all those who taught me, I was enlightened. Al kein ramaz lanu amram bezivugo shela kachet odato. So this is hinted to us in Amram marrying and taking his aunt, Shehila mala b'madrega mimenu, because she is higher than him in levels, kidei sheyetze mi'itam shoresh haTorah, so that it would come out of them, the root of the Torah, ayudei Moshe Rabbeinu olav hashalom, sheye seder halimud gam ken kach, that the way that we learn Torah, the way that we relate to the Torah, should also be this way. Shelo yevosh hagadol lekabel min hakatan, so that the greater should not be embarrassed to receive from somebody who is katan mimenu, who is less than him. V'kal lehavin. So I loved this. I love this model for how we teach, how we learn, how we relate to Torah, and how we learn it all from Amram taking his aunt. Okay, I could just end there. I think I might end there. This is a beautiful midrash about Moshe worrying about how his death will impact his mother, which is just really nice to see that relationship. And then this midrash, okay, I have to end with this. Chochmat Nashim Banta Bita, Beta, this is from Mishle, the wisdom of women built her house. Zo Yocheved She'amida Shlosha Tzadikim. This is Yocheved, who had three righteous people. So this is the wisdom of women, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. V'shloshtam zachu l'shamesh et Yisrael. All three of them merited to serve Israel. Moshe with the man, Aaron with the clouds of glory, and Miriam with the well. V'shloshtam hayu nevi'im. And all three of them were prophets. And it gives a pasuk for each of them. We'll go over the pasuk of Miriam when we get to B'shalach. And then I just thought that was funny. V'avlat v'yadehu terasanu. So, but a foolish one tears it down with her hands. Who is that? Zeresh harasha, eshet Haman harasha. Zeresh, the wife of Haman. Okay, we'll skip that one. And we'll go to this last pasuk. In Micha, ki haliticha me'aretz Mitzrayim in beit avadim petiticha. I brought you up out of the land of Egypt and redeemed you from the house of slavery. Ve'ashlach lefanecha et Moshe, Aaron, u'Miriam. And I sent before you Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, and our same favorite Targum, Yonatan ben Uziel. He explains, Moshe la'alafa misirat dinin. Moshe was to teach the laws. Aaron l'chapara al-ama. Aaron was to atone for the nation. U'Miriam lo'ara'a l'neshaya. And Miriam was to teach the women. They don't have the Hebrew translation outside of the Torah part of this Targum. And then, again, Midrash Mishle, Choshmat Nashim, Banta Bita, that same pasuk. Zo Yocheved, She'amida, Shlosha Tzadikim, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Oh, I read that already. I want to end with that instead. Sorry. So you see how the Tanakh and the rabbis attribute the greatness of Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam to their mother, Yocheved. And I hope that you've come out of this having a richer, more multidimensional view of who Yocheved was, and Amram, and why they merit to have their names mentioned in this strange placement of a genealogy, to show that this was the fruits of all their labor, of who they are, of what they dedicated their lives to, and dedicating it to the Jewish people, that this is the moment where they see all of their dreams come to fulfillment when Moshe and Aaron go on their successful mission 2.0 to Paro, and the process of redeeming the Jewish people from Egypt begins. Thank you, everybody.